Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we've been talking sports. So I felt the need to call our sports expert, my friend, Daryl Ledbetter. Daryl, welcome.
Kiplin, thanks for having me on the show.
Always glad to have you on the show. And one of the things we have been talking about is the Braves Heritage Award Ceremony, where we spoke with Eric Holder, Bob Costas, and Hank Aaron. And even though this was around Braves and baseball, the question that kept coming up that won't go away is the NFL's protest, the players' protest at the national anthem. Could you share with our listeners a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Yes, Kiplin, we've seen the protests come full cycle here within the last 18 months. We're started over social and racial injustices, and then got flipped around until a protest of the military, when in fact the original protesters did not have anything to do with the military. We had folks maybe not recognizing the powers invested in the First Amendment of the United States, where you of the U.S. Constitution, where you have the right to peaceably protest, and that's what the players were trying to do in reaction to, you know, the killings in Charleston, you know, the police killing in Minnesota, and the rash of violations upon the black community. And so the president and other folks have taken the focus off of that and turned it to the military, when in actuality, it was about a just and social protest.
And Daryl, in my opinion, the brouhaha over the whole thing had kind of gone away until the owners got together. I mean, honest, the whole thing had gone away and the owners got together earlier this year and decided to implement these antiquated, you know, penalties if the players continued the protest.
And I spoke with several, and they didn't do anything in Orlando, and they passed this rule here in Atlanta, saying that if the players didn't want to stand for the anthem, they could stay in the locker room or face being fined. Then they did that without negotiating with the NFLPA, and now they're kind of in a stalemate, trying to work out something that both parties can agree with, when they really should just went on about their business. They wanted to play the anthem, fine. If guys wanted to kneel, that was their First Amendment right, and keep it moving. But they've kind of, you know, helped themselves by trying to, you know, require their players to stand. And Arthur Blank said, you didn't want to hit the players over the head with a hammer about this, but, you know, they stood. But, you know, you didn't want to violate their First Amendment rights at the same time.
So do we know where it stands now? I know football season is right around the corner. We're gearing up. People are excited about the Falcons and about, you know, the Super Bowl coming to Atlanta. Where does this protest stand now?
Well, it is in a very kind of nebulous place, and it'll start to unfold this weekend as teams start to play the exhibition game. I know the Falcons had a military day last Sunday, and all of the players were standing. Their position seems to be, we do our work in the community as individuals and as a team. So, you know, they're trying to address the social ills in the community in Atlanta and in their respective hometowns. And so by doing that, that gives them some clearance of mind to, you know, stand for the anthem and honor the military. So they're trying to address things on two different fronts. But as far as the rule requiring them to stand, that is still being negotiated and worked out. I think it's going to end up in a good place with the players' rights being able to, you know, if you want to kneel, you'll be able to some. And one player in Tennessee definitely said he's kneeling. He's still, you know, not happy with where we are with regards to the social and racial injustices in the country. And, you know, his right to do that is, available to him.
I am just amazed that this has gone this far. I remember a time if a player, you know, made the touchdown and kneeled, it was celebrated. And now for kneeling in protest, it has been, you know, just turned into something beyond what it was in order to, in my opinion, to kind of gin people up.
Yeah, and what we, you know, in the media and the folks who are covering it have to, you know, reiterate that this is not a anthem protest. This was a protest for social and racial injustice. I've had to correct, you know, editors and other writers and reporters with that regard, that these are two separate issues. And, you know, folks have tried to muddle the water and confuse it, not address the point that was trying to be made in the first place. And that's been, a common tactic throughout our U.S. history. And, you know, to really rectify the situation, you have to, you know, make sure you're focused on what the real problems are, what the fake ones are, and what people are trying to do to confuse the situation.
Well, thank you for shedding some light on that. One of the other challenges that continue to come up in our interviews about baseball is the lack of African-American players in baseball. You know, when you and I were growing up, there were lots of African-American baseball players. And now we've gotten into a situation where there are whole teams in the league without any African-American players. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you see as some solutions?
Yeah, I was just got back from the NABJ convention in Detroit, and I'm sitting there watching the Reds and the Tigers, and I couldn't name two players, you know, on either team, you know, and certainly couldn't name any, if they had any African-Americans on the team. I think we saw a whitewashing of baseball when folks started to specialize the kids in individual sports, you know, around 90s with AAU teams and specialized baseball. And so traditionally, if you were good in sports, you played all three. You went from baseball season to football season, overlap with basketball, and then you maybe played tennis in the summer or, you know, maybe, you know, golf if you, you know, were in that crowd. But today's coaches and today's high schools don't have control over the youth sports, where the parents get in this notion that, hey, you know, I'm gonna, little Bobby at 12 is gonna be a baseball star, little Bobby at 12 is gonna be, or little Raheem's gonna be a football star. And then, you know, so you end up with a lot of the African-American kids in baseball, in basketball and football, and not so much in baseball. Because, you know, it is a different sport. It is a different pace. It's, you know, it's somewhat intellectual. You're not as much activity. So, you know, there's appreciation of baseball that has been lost in the community, too. That, you know, what can you just sit around for 3 hours, pay attention, get into the game, know the complexities of a 6-4-3 double play? Can you score the game? So, yeah, there's a lot more to baseball, and you can just get some tennis shoes and a ball and go play basketball, and you can get more folks involved that way. And football is king right now. It's the number one sport in all the land, you know, TV rating and monetary-wise, although the players don't have a guaranteed contract. But I think it starts at the youth level where we haven't, you know, some of the kids may not even know how to, you know, switch hit or getting a proper baseball stance, or, you know, defend themselves against a hot ground ball, you know, or catch a fly ball. So, and I know my nephews don't. I'm probably guilty of not taking them out to the field and teaching them the fine art of playing baseball.
Wow. So going right back to football, we've got the Super Bowl coming to Atlanta. A lot of people are saying the Super Bowl is coming to Atlanta, so the Falcons can be in it. Do we have any chance, Mr. Ledbetter?
Yes, you do. Kipling, the Falcons are very hot right now. The only team in the NFC to go back-to-back to the playoffs. One pass away from beating the Eagles last year. Or one tip ball right before halftime by Keanu Neal. and they beat the Eagles and maybe go to the Super Bowl and vindicate what happened to them in Super Bowl 51. They only have to find two starters, the fullback and the right guard. On the offensive side, on the defensive side, they have to find two at tackle and end. And they already drafted the end, so they should be fine there. And they may have drafted the tackle this year in Deidre Sanat. So if they can just stay healthy, they're already on the plane. The coaches know each other better. Matt Ryan and Steve Sarkisian should blend well together in the second year. It's a tougher schedule, but Coach Quinn has really instilled into this team the physical, hard-hitting style of play that I think most fans have to appreciate. And, the old fans recognize, hey, their window's open. They opened it up early by getting there with a young defense with a bunch of first- and second-year guys. And, Matt Ryan's 33, Julio's 29. Your key players are in the prime. They're not going to be scared of anything. They're not going to be seeing anything new. And they won't back down. So I think the Falcons have as good a chance as any team in recent history of making it to the Super Bowl as the host team.
I hope God is listening in. Daryl Ledbetter, thanks so much for always being able to come and share with our listeners about sports. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Clifton. It was a pleasure coming on your show, and thanks for having me once again.
Take care.